The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
On new research from Allianz suggests that high installation costs are putting people off retrofitting their homes. Will the rising cost of living put going green on the long finger for many people? And what more can the government do to take the sting out of the transition to a greener society? Well, for more on this, I'm joined now by a professor in energy economics at the School of Economics at UCD, Lisa Ryan. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, people start looking at deep retrofitting of their homes, and that's an expensive business.
Well, it is an expensive business if we're talking about the full deep retrofit of a building. But there are many things that we can do to start the process. If we think about what you need to do to improve and reduce the amount of energy that we all use, you know, it starts with just attic insulation and goes right through to, you know, external wall insulation, windows, deep floor, underfloor heating and heat pumps. So there are a range of options that we can put in place. But the main thing I suppose we need to think about is that reducing our energy demand reduces our energy bills and helps the environment. So we're, you know, killing a few birds with one stone, if you will.
Now, we have to look at our housing stock and see how it is fueled. And we've all seen the oil tankers in the back garden where people have oil-fired central heating. Other people have a cleaner form of central heating, burning gas. So what are people to do? Because not everyone can have the space to install a heat pump in their backyard.
Well, we do have a very high share of houses heating their using oil basically as their heating fuel, and it's one of the highest shares in Europe. And that's really historical because a lot of, you know, our housing stock are detached houses or even semi-detached houses that are located outside, you know, villages or cities or towns. And so that means that they're not on the gas grid. So when it came to installing central heating, people didn't have too many options, but they put in an oil tank and an oil boiler in their homes. But it does mean, you know, that many of these homes have very high costs, they're very carbon intensive, but arguably if you have the space for an oil boiler, you would also have the space for an air-to-water heat pump in the yard. And probably, you know, if we're thinking about how should we be strategizing, you know, obviously resources are limited, we have to think about which houses should be targeted, which homes should be targeted in terms of reducing their energy demand and their costs. And it's really these homes that have got oil boilers, and some even are fueling with solid fuel, so they may not even have central heating. They may be using open fires to heat their homes. That these should be targeted first.
Now, to replace your oil boiler with a heat pump is going to cost big money, and what the payback time will be will depend on the relative prices of fossil fuels, oil, versus the cost of electricity. But just put it in context, if you could get your house from maybe a current D rate to a B1 or an A3, you might not have to change the boiler.
Well,
not yet, shall we say, because your use of oil would go down so dramatically that you'd be saving a lot of carbon.
That's right. And, you know, and that's how people should think about it in terms of the different steps that they're going to take. They should first of all be looking at the fabric of the building and reducing that demand so that no matter what fuel source they have, they're going to, you know, be using less of it and reducing their costs that way. I think the objective, though, with heat pumps is to reduce our dependency on foreign imports of oil in the long term that are also very carbon intensive. So the heat pump is an extra step. And I would suggest that, you know, in urban areas where maybe, you know, people have options with very efficient gas boilers, that, you know, they should probably be targeted first of all with other systems, but the oil boilers are the ones that you would target with the heat pump. But I agree with you that it's really about trying to improve the, you know, reducing that demand so people don't have these high energy costs in the first place. And I mean, when you're thinking about this, it is interesting because I was looking at statistics and in 1987, half of our housing stock had no central heating at all. But by 2011, only 3% had none. So we have made huge transformations in the past. You know, people move from having no central heating to everybody having central heating. And now the question is, what does that look like and how efficient are our housing? And it is, you know, we have studied, compared to other countries before, and we have very poor quality housing stock, so that many of these one-off houses, or detached houses rather, they, you know, they may have poor insulation, poor windows. They were built a long time ago. And this is what we need to look at. I mean, we have the lowest share of apartments, say, in Europe. So a lot of European countries would have quite a different sort of situation than we would, you know.
Yeah. Now, earlier on News Talk Breakfast, they were talking about replacing a lot of heating in the home with electrical heating, which may seem maybe not the most efficient thing to do. But in terms of the grid going forward, where you'll have windmills in every parish kind of thing, that the electricity supply will be very close to the homes that they are servicing, and therefore less of a load on the grid. We'll park that one for the moment, but it is part of the overall philosophy. So yeah. If you were going to replace an oil boiler with a heat pump, my theory and my belief is that the cost of heat pumps is going to come down dramatically as it becomes a mass market commodity.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, heat pumps isn't even that new a technology. In fact, you know, countries like Sweden and Norway and Finland have had them for a very long time. So I'm not sure how much they're going to come down. But I'd say what we will see is that the installation costs, in terms of you know, the services around it, they will certainly come down because people will become more used to it, and you know, the plumbers and the trades who are putting them in, it'll be very normal for them, and so there won't be a premium associated with them. I would say that, you know, there are significant grants available for installation, not just heat pumps, but also the overall insulation and the other energy efficiency measures that you should do first from SEAI. And now, you know, they have the system of one-stop shop. So if you know that you want to do the whole lot and you really need to do a deep renovation, what you need to do is you can look on their website, and they have a list of the one-stop shops. And one-stop shops are basically companies that will, you know, run through it all with you, manage it. Some even provide the finance for it to alleviate the upfront cost, and then you pay it back over time. So I think that's really helpful, because I think one of the big barriers to carrying out any of these retrofit activities is really just thinking about where do I start, and not having, none of us are experts, you know, in terms of what you know, should I do my windows first or should I do my insulation first? Whereas if you can find one of these one-stop shops that will look at it from a very holistic perspective and give you advice, and then they will actually carry it out and organise the contractors for you, I think that can help a lot of people.
I mean, you just have to watch out for the chancers who want to maybe get you to do the most expensive thing upon which they make the most money, rather than the thing that's the greenest thing.
Yeah.
Now, the question of EVs and the take-up of EVs has increased dramatically, far more dramatically than people believed. Is it 7% of new cars thus far this year, EVs, compared to 1% just a couple of years ago? You maintain that the economics of EVs is improving.
That's for sure. I mean, you can see, you know, the upfront cost. I mean, the cost of a new vehicle, EV or non-EV, is never cheap. I think we all know that. But if you compare the new cost, they are still a little bit more expensive than, say, a petrol cost. But if you think of it in terms of the total cost, the total operating cost of the vehicle, which includes, of course, your running costs, it includes your insurance, but also your maintenance. Maintenance is cheaper on EV as well because they have much less moving parts. You can see that they're nearly at parity, in fact. And again, sorry, I'm referring back to SEAI again, but they have a calculator there where you can put in different vehicle models and it'll make that comparison for you and can see directly. And just looking at all of the vehicles, once you take into the running costs into account, and I'm sure even now with the higher fuel cost that we have, it's even more favourable, you can see that once you get over that upfront cost, the payback, because the running cost is so much cheaper.
And depreciation is something as well. We don't know yet. We haven't had the mass market in EVs long enough to know, but I would suspect that they retain much more of their value than a petrol or a diesel car does.
I think they will. As you say, we're not in this game long enough to know what the second-hand market will look like. But at the moment, the demand for second-hand EVs is huge, you know, so because there aren't many of them around, and that's going to be the situation for a while. And we really need the second-hand market to take off, because most of us don't buy brand new cars. So the depreciation is likely to be, I think, you know, not very high for EVs. And, you know, the only thing will be the battery, but the new batteries, they're talking about 10, 15 years, which is the equivalent of, you know, the lifetime of a petrol or a diesel car. So I think the depreciation is not going to be an issue. I think it's something people worried about in the past just because we didn't have experience of it. But now that we're looking around, we realize this market is here to stay. And there's no cars coming over from the UK. It's the other, our big second-hand market is effectively closed to us at the moment, thanks to Brexit. It means that there is going to be a very strong second-hand market for EVs.
One final point from a listener. Can you please ask, what is the cost of a heat pump and the life of it? Because my plumber says it's about €9,000 and the life of it is about 10 years, which would work out, therefore, at €1,000 a year. So where would my saving come from?
Well, heat pumps, it depends on the type of heat pump that you get. Most people are installing the air-to-water heat pumps, and they cost, it depends, between about €6,000 and €11,000. You will get a grant for about €6,500 of that, and they definitely last longer than 10 years. I mean, I think we're definitely into 15 or 20 years, as far as I'm aware. I'm not a buildings engineer, but this is what you're talking about. So once you've taken into account the grant, you know, it is definitely much less than 9,000 for sure, you know. If you look at it from a whole of house perspective, then you would be reducing your demand as well on top of that. So, you know, the payback would be quicker than you would expect.
Lisa Ryan, Professor in Energy Economics at the School of Economics at UCD. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.